Whenever you're ready there, Richard, and I'll let in Mr. Groat.
Is Andrew Martinez available at all?
I do not see him. I did not hear from him saying that he would not be able to make it, so I do expect him. So we can give him another minute or two.
Yeah, it's, here he comes. Good. All right, Andrew's here, so I think we can call the meeting to order if you're all ready.
Okay.
Let's call the meeting to order. It is 5:31 p.m. on February 4th, 2021. Calling the meeting of the South Kingstown Historic District Commission to order. We'll have a roll call, and I'll read the names, and you can say here. To acknowledge your presence. Andrew Martinez.
Here.
Linda Stedman.
Here.
Karen Da Silva.
Here.
Shantia Underhagen.
Here.
And Richard Yonkin, I'm here speaking. So I think we have all of our members in attendance. Is that correct?
All of our active members, correct?
Yes, all of our active members. So I think we can move on to item three, which is the approval of the minutes. The draft minutes for our December 9th, 2020 meeting, I think were mailed out to you. Do we have any comments? Any corrections? And I may call on you individually, just so we're sure that the record's clear that you have none. Karen, do you have any comments on the minutes? No.
Hello, Richard. This is Andy Tights. Can I make a suggestion?
Certainly.
Just if you had a motion to approve the minutes and second it, and then for these simple motions, what I suggest boards do is you ask if there's anyone opposed. And then if there's no one opposed, then you've got it approved. Obviously, when you're actually reviewing something or granting or denying something, you'd have a roll call vote. But that seemed to work well for the minutes to keep things like that, to keep things moving quickly.
Well, we just want to make sure that if anybody has any corrections, are able to say that. So why don't we move on?
So I'll make a motion to approve the minutes then.
All right, is there a second for that?
I'll second.
So the motion is put forward and seconded. Do we have a vote? I'll call the roll call. I don't think there's any discussion. Karen Da Silva?
Aye.
Linda Stedman?
Aye.
Andrew Martinez?
Aye.
Shantia Underhagen?
Aye.
Richard Yonkin, aye. I think we can move on to, we have a bit of a deadline here. The staff is going to have to leave at 7:00, and we want to get Andy Tights on board to talk to us fairly quickly. So I think what we might do is take the correspondence, if it's okay with the rest of the commission, and move it to after old business or later into the agenda. Is that okay with everybody? Just move ahead. So that allows us to go to new business. And I think what we might do is take the certificate of appropriateness first and move on with that right away, and then take Andy after that. So we'll switch A and B, if that's okay with the rest of the commission. Anybody object to that?
Nope.
All right, I think we're all in favor of doing that. So we'll take on the certificate of appropriateness, item 5B at 2854 Kingstown Road, Assessor's Plat 23-3, Lot 29. This is an application by David Grote, and he is here. Thank you for attending, David. And I just want to say a few things in advance, and it's mainly to give us a historical context. This is a Matthew Waite house dating from 1819 and possibly earlier. It's a 2.5-story structure with a large brick center chimney on that center entryway. There's some colonial revival elements, I think, on it. The house was improved by the Eddy family in the early 1900s, 1910 or so. So it's a very important house in the district and has a lot of original intact features, and some features have probably got modified over time. Mr. Grote's application is before us, and he is coming before us for new siding, painting of the siding and repair and finishing of the siding for painting, new roof, and which is very important, I believe, because of leakage that already is occurring, and shutter repair. He will also be doing some vegetative clearing, and those are really the major items before us. But let's hear from Mr. Grote and for his application.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining us. It's an interesting time, to be sure. So I've owned the house since about 2012. It's a rental property. I lived out in Maryland. My wife is active duty Navy physician here at Walter Reed Bethesda. I lived in Rhode Island for many years. I like historic properties. That's one of the reasons I bought the house. I like 18th century and early 19th century properties. I've restored some in the past. But the house needs a lot of work, and it's definitely time to do it. But immediately I have a leak, active leak in the attic. It's around the center chimney, and the roof is at the end of its useful life, so it's the right time to change the roof. So that was the first thing on my list there. The proposed roof will be, I think, an improvement from an architectural perspective. I'm going with a CertainTeed Landmark architectural shingles in a weathered wood color. So I think it'll look a lot more like the wooden shakes that would have been on the house originally than what's currently on there, which are just basic asphalt shingles. In addition, it needs some pruning, some brush clearing and cutting of ivy that's growing up the side of the house, that sort of thing, in preparation for painting. Just proposing to remove some dead branches and some minor landscape cleanup. Would not be removing any large trees or hedges, just some general TLC. The next thing is repair and rehang existing wooden shutters. You can see from the pictures I attached the application, one of the shutters is kind of hanging off. They all need a little bit of TLC. Would not be replacing them. Would just be repairing them, and then rehanging them, remounting them, and then repair and fill where required on the siding, existing wooden siding. You might have to replace some slats or some wood here and there, but for the most part, just keep what's there. And I was just repainting it in the same colors as currently is, basically it's white with black shutters. And so I'd just be matching the colors. I don't know exactly what color white it is or what color black it is, but the plan is to match what's there. If there's some historic evidence that can tell me that a different color would be better for the house, I'm open to it, but my plan was to just paint what's there. And then the last thing, which I don't think impacts this group because it doesn't change anything on the exterior of the house, I just wanted to add it on the list. I also unfortunately need to replace the boiler, which is in the basement. There won't be any exterior changes to the house from that replacement. But that's one other thing that I'm doing there. So that's basically it. And the timeline for this is hopefully I'll be doing this over the next few weeks. Obviously, I can't do exterior painting until it gets a little warmer, but that's my plan. So that's it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Grote. That's a great summary. Just for your information, we do not have jurisdiction over paint colors or the coloration of shutters or the siding of the building. We are concerned that they be coated in some way, painted, but the color is really your choice.
Okay.
And you're right about the interior, the boiler and whatnot. We don't have jurisdiction over that as well.
Right.
So I think with that presentation, I'll open it up for questions from the commission. And we have questions, anybody on the commission?
Yeah.
Yes, Andrew, thank you.
Will you be resurfacing the roof of that portico over the front door there? That
Yes, it will be part of the resurfacing. The part which won't be, which you can't really see very well, there's a flat section of the roof in the rear off the kitchen L. There's a peak section of the kitchen L, and then there's a flat section. That flat section I did in 2012. It's not visible to the exterior at all. But that front porch will be done.
And when the roofing is done, do you think the gutters will end up being replaced as well, or?
I'm hoping, I didn't have plans to replace the gutters. I didn't think about that when I put it on the thing, but I didn't have plans to replace it. I think what's on there now is just aluminum gutters.
Mm-hmm.
What's on the roof now? It looks like it's asphalt shingles.
I'm sorry.
What's on the roof now? Is it asphalt shingles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're pretty basic asphalt shingles. They're not, they don't even attempt to look like shakes or anything. So this will definitely be a nice improvement.
Shanti, you have a question?
I have a question. First of all, it's a nice plan to see someone come in with good maintenance going on. That's appreciated. The chimney flashing, taking a look at the chimney. Generally, when you get a roof done, you often will get the chimney flashing done at the same time. Yeah. Is that part of the plan?
Yes, it is. It will be lead flashing.
Okay. So, Rich, are we just asking questions now, or can we make comments and suggestions?
I think you can make comments as you okay. Ask questions. We'll get into a motion pretty soon, I think.
Okay. I appreciate all this work. I would make the suggestion that the color of the shingles match what you have there now, a charcoal or a black, because generally I appreciate the inclination to have your new roof look like wood shakes, but in fact, they end up looking like asphalt that is trying to look like wood oftentimes.
Okay, yeah.
And it just doesn't work. You know, we're used to looking at asphalt roofing on buildings, on historic buildings. And I think just a good charcoal, not even a deep black, but a charcoal gray would be a better choice. And would, that's my suggestion again.
So that's, The color that I picked out is kind of a darker brown. It's a weathered wood, I think. I don't know if you see it in the package.
I'm familiar with these shingles. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I would go toward one of the charcoal darker grays rather than a brown, because they don't end up looking like wood roofs. They just look like brown asphalt roofs.
Okay.
And other commissioners may have comments on that as well. And then my only other comment was to just encourage you to be very careful with the siding repairs. Although I don't think these are original clapboards, they look to me to be a little bit later, but making sure you're not using heat guns or rotary sanders, and you know, just being gentle with your prep, good prep, but gentle.
Okay.
Again, it's a little bit probably outside of our purview, but just a suggestion that there are lots of preservation briefs online that can point your contractor to the appropriate approach to a historic building.
Okay.
So we have a comment from Brian. So hand up, Brian.
Yeah, just to work off of what Shantia just said, I would direct David to look at the standards and guidelines when it does talk about surface preparation for paint and using gentle methods, staying away from aggressive methods like sandblasting and stuff like that, in order to preserve as much of the original material as you can and not damage the surface. Insofar as the roof goes, the regulations are clear that a straight exchange asphalt for asphalt shouldn't be a problem. I understand, I haven't handled all that many of these reviews, but I got the call from Mr. Grote, and he was anxious to get the roof repaired because it was leaking, and I had the availability to put him on the agenda, so I did. But after some further reading, it appears to me that what he's asking to do really falls into the routine maintenance category. There are no aesthetic or visual changes being made to the house. It's paint and a new roof. In hindsight, I think that this is something that would have gone through a lesser review on applicability determination rather than a full certificate of appropriateness.
I think Brian is correct in large degree. This is a wonderful, thank you, Mr. Grote, for this wonderful maintenance project. The building is overdue for it, and we're very pleased that you're going to go ahead with this. But it is the kind of thing that can be done administratively. And that is with regard to the fact that you are suggesting that you're not going to be changing anything, you're going to be using best practice on the painting, the preparation for the painting. The building does have a lot of architectural features that are detailed in terms of the moldings and the raking boards to the roof, the window trim, the cornice work, the door surrounds. Splayed lintels over the windows. There's a lot going on this building. It's very interesting because it's painted white. You don't see a lot of it unless you get up close to it. I think Shanti is correct in the assessment of the clapboards. They seem to be maybe more recent, and they do get repaired and replaced over time. But I think you're assuring us, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're going to be paying particular attention to all those details. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So the standards, the applicable standards that we're operating under in our standards and guidelines are standards 4, 6, 7, and 8, and then the more detailed guidelines 23, 31 through 33, and 35. Mm-hmm. Primarily 35 has to deal with the roof, the replacement in kind with asphalt. I think Shanti's pointed out some just a method for you maybe to simplify and save some money, but the color choice is really your choice. but I think replacement in kind is what you're considering. And then the prep work and all that's described, as Brian has said, in our standards and guidelines, you might want to look at very carefully and advise your contractor. So I think, are there any more comments or anything, any questions of the applicant that are coming before us from the commission?
I guess the only question I would have for you is just, it's hard to tell on some of these pictures, but to Richard's point about, as you embark on this project and you discover, like I'm looking at one window, I can't tell if that's mildew or if that's like a quizzical molding above a window that might have a crack in it. So I guess as you're going through those repairs and the standards, right, of keeping materials in kind.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at page 6. It's the picture with the shutter that's hanging off, but it's the window to the right.
Yeah, I don't have any, and I would come back if I needed to make any changes to windows or anything like that. But I have no plans to do anything like that.
I was talking about the molding around the window. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the wood around. It's the
there's quite a bow to that wall. It's bent out quite a bit on that wall. And so it's pretty interesting. I haven't, because of COVID, I haven't been to the property in a year and a half. I'm relying somewhat on my contractor and my contractor's pictures. So
I think if you have any repair to make on that wall, then you'll have to come back to us with a specific application.
I had a lot of structural work done in 2012 and by a expert in 18th century construction, it's stable. Obviously we need to fix the roof, but the house isn't going anywhere. It's just nothing's level or square. So.
Well, let me say one thing before we go into our motion. I don't know if you all noticed in the commission that the shutters are old shutters that look like they at one time could be operated. Yeah. And I don't know if you realize this, but they're actually on the building the correct way, where the shutter, the moving pieces are exposed. That means that would happen when you open them. So many of our houses, they've reversed them and put them on backwards. So we very much hope that when you take them off and paint them and put them back on, that somehow they get numbered, number one and number two.
Yeah.
You put them on the same way they are now.
Absolutely. I'll make sure that they do that.
Right. So do we have I hope all of you paid attention to the various things that have been discussed. Do we have a motion from a commission member for this application? Anyone willing to make a motion?
I'll try. Let's see. I move that we approve the certificate of appropriateness at 2854 Kingstown Road, Assessor's Plat 23-3, Lot 29, for asphalt roof replacement, exterior sidewall cleaning and repainting, reflashing of the chimney, and Andrew, you added something. I'm sorry to have to ask, but there was something you asked about that.
It's about pruning and the landscape, maintenance.
I think Andrew's addition was about the porch roof, to make sure that
that's right. Included. Okay, so re-roofing the main house and the front and the porch.
And repairing the shutters.
And repairing and reinstalling the shutters as they currently exist.
Yeah.
I think that's the end of my motion, proposed motion.
Before we have a second, I want to say that we want to add into this motion the secretary, the standards and guidelines that we have cited. Do you want me to read those out again?
Yes, those are, thanks, Rich. I didn't write the numbers, I'm sorry.
It's quite a roll call. It's 4, 6, 7, 8, 23, 31 through 33, and 35. There's quite a range here because we're talking about a number of things on the building. Also that we want to approve his project as it's described in his application. We want that mentioned. I think that covers it. Brian, do you have any other items that?
No, I think you covered it all.
All right. So do we have a second for that motion?
I'll second.
All right, let's have a vote by roll call. Karen Da Silva?
Aye.
Linda Stedman?
Aye.
Andrew Martinez?
Aye.
Shanti Underhagen?
Aye.
And Richard Youngkin? Aye. So the ayes have it. We've approved a certificate of appropriateness for your project, Mr. Grote. So thank you very much. And with that, I think we've dealt with that end of the business on the agenda. And
thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank
good
you.
Luck on your project.
All right. Thank you. All right.
We should be able to move on to the next item, which is our discussions with Mr. Tights. So I guess we need to unmute you.
You can unmute
yourself. I can unmute myself. I've just been
good.
Muted in the background, and I hear the garage door opening. My wife's coming home. I may have to put the headphones on. Except they're Bluetooth, and the last time I did that, I like somehow disconnected. Going to the Bluetooth headphones disconnected the entire Zoom from my connection. Anyway, so we'll try it without it.
well, how much? Have you been given in terms of our items for questions, or do you have any background that you need from us about why you're here, why you're in front of us?
No, I thought I was just the victim du jour.
After some of our previous discussions, I thought it might be helpful, and I think it's always a good idea on sort of a regular basis to have legal counsel step in and refresh board members' minds about the extent of the board's responsibilities and authorities, just as a general case. And then Richard, you forwarded me some additional questions arising out of the cottage zoning issue in terms of the relationship between the historic district and the zoning ordinance.
Correct.
So I think, as you know, I have a lot of experience with historic district representation. In fact, that's why I have to leave at 7:02. The Bristol Historic District Commission is meeting tonight. It's their monthly meeting. So I need to be there to represent them. I think it's been about a decade or maybe more since you last called on me. I guess you're doing a good job. If you're not calling for a lawyer to be present at the meetings, then I assume things are running smoothly. I have been aware of what's going on with the zoning, the cottage zoning and whatnot, and the issues, as was just said by Brian. And I did want to basically be available to answer your questions and discussion about that. I think the first question, you know, that I do know was about what would prevail, the historic district versus if this new cottage zoning was in. That's a kind of simple question, but beyond that, I'm here for your questions and to discuss it. Some of you, well, Richard, you know, I'm also a planner too, in addition to the lawyer part. So I'm happy to discuss these things. And if there's any other questions about procedure or historic district jurisdiction and stuff, I'm available tonight until 7. And of course, in general, in the future, if you, you know, need me to, you need to call on me, that's part of our job.
Well, thanks, Andy. And I think I want to sort of lead off with the discussion and then have other board members come in. One of the things that the cottage zoning sort of brought up in my mind, and I think in other commission members' minds, is exactly that question about the underlying zoning, and how does our jurisdiction sort of influence that or vice versa. And it had been my experience for many years with this kind of work that we really couldn't bother too much with what exists in the underlying zone in terms of dimensional regulations, use limitations, and other parameters that the underlying zone sets up. Our niche in terms of an overlay district is really all about the exterior appearance of the buildings. And it was my understanding that we don't go very much beyond that, except we can now look at landscape features, historic landscape features. And those are things that we are not small planting beds and that nature, they're primary sort of structural things in the landscape, as well as historic trees or specimen trees. So with that as a preamble, Andy, I think the big question for you from me is to sort of straighten us out a little bit on what is it about the underlying zone that's sort of untouchable from our perspective? And what are the things that we can have jurisdiction over in the underlying zone?
Okay, and that's a good question. I think first let's talk about what you don't have jurisdiction over, which would be the use and anything that's going on inside any of the existing structures on the property. So for example, and I know this is one of the future things and we might get to it tonight or in the not, but this idea of whatever we're calling the mansion housing, the idea of allowing, you know, existing large structures to be used for multiple family dwellings. As long as there's no change to the exterior, then you wouldn't have any jurisdiction over that at all. What you do have is you do have jurisdiction over the requirements on the dimensional stuff and what's allowed with structures and buildings. And if you think about it, it's kind of the same thing now. If someone came in, I don't even know, I don't think you have any vacant lots in there, but whatever.
No, we do.
Okay. So if someone came in and, you know, wanted to build a building that you thought was out of scale and out of character with the district, or significantly so, even if they somehow managed to meet the setbacks or managed to get a variance from the zoning board, you would still have the ability to deny that. You'd obviously have to make the appropriate findings of fact and referring to the neighboring structures and why it's out of character and scale with it. But you would have that authority even now. That's the point. You're a classic overlay zone that imposes stricter requirements than the underlying zone.
Can I interrupt you just for a minute, Andy?
Yep. It,
just on that question. If for instance, and I think we had this in the past, the setback was not, the setback requirement was greater than we want, was greater than the building line, and we wanted the building at the building line. Mm-hmm. I think it was only a few feet, but that required the developer or the person building the house to go to the zoning board and ask for a variance so that they could build the house closer to the street than the setback required. So we got there we would have preferred that they build it at the setback line. He was fortunate to get, at the building line, he was fortunate to get the zoning board dimensional variance to do so. But had he not received that, we could not have gone any further than that. In other words, it would have been at the zoning, underlying zoning setback line. Is that correct?
That's correct. You have to respect that as well. And you don't have the power to vary the underlying zoning other than to make it stricter, like I was saying, but you can't make it looser, which is technically what's going on in that case, where if there's, you know, a 10-foot front yard, you don't have the ability to grant it to, say, zero right up to the street line. Yeah. That's really more for, you know, either, as said, you go to the zoning board, or you go to the how the zoning ordinance is written, yeah, and write it so that, you know, the setbacks in this district should be, you know, less. I think we've done a lot of that over time. We tried to, both with downtown Wakefield and so forth in general, establish zoning that's more in keeping with the New England village urban feel of reducing those front yard setbacks. And I think we also have, language in there now about the average of the neighboring properties as well, to try to bring buildings closer to the street.
I'm sorry that interrupted you. No,
that's okay. I guess I was getting to the same idea. So if we had something with cottage zoning that provided for, you know, developing multiple small structures on a property, you would still be able to deny it. If you thought, again, you know, for example, if it was too dense, even though it might be allowed by the underlying zoning to have six cottages on this particular lot, and you're looking at it and thinking it's overly dense, particularly if you're adding cottages to an existing building where there's a lot where there's an existing building or whatnot, and you would have the ability to deny it, notwithstanding the underlying cottage zoning. Now, I think, you know, the immediate problem is solved because the historic district has been removed from the ordinance on the cottage zoning. It's just going to say not applicable in the historic district. But if it were going forward or something similar, you would still have the final say on that aspect of it.
How about the placement of the cottage, the sort of open space requirement?
Absolutely.
Interesting. Now, in terms of the, our sense of wanting to do something with cottage, that kind of concept, in other words, have something available for affordable housing that would allow us to maybe use the existing dwellings as some of the density. Because they already, many of them already have affordable units in them. How would that, I think we're thinking about perhaps crafting a whole new applicable kind of zoning. Maybe that's a mansion type zoning. I don't know, that would help us with this. But, and that's, where would that start? Would that start with the Historic District Commission really beginning to set standards and guidelines that would help us review projects, help us more than our existing standards and guidelines do for that kind of change over?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have very good standards and guidelines. Your guidebook is very detailed and very well written. Just coincidence, Richard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you've got that there. I mean, it's really working. You got Brian here and you got Jamie on the Zoom too. You're very lucky in South Kingstown to have a substantial and skilled planning department with the resources. And I think working with them as far as in crafting it, you know, what I see is, you know, if the changes are being made to the underlying zoning to allow the increased density and whatnot. You know, probably what you're going to be looking at is things like adding extra entrances and extra parking and things like that. That's probably what's going to come on that sort of thing. If we're not talking about cottages, but just existing houses and increasing their density, that's probably the factors that you would be wanting to look at. And I don't know. I mean, I think you pretty well handled them as it is. I don't know, you know, how much more you'd do to it.
Well, I think what we would maybe more so in terms of the outbuildings that exist, thinking about conversions of carriage barns and mm-hmm. sheds and other outbuildings, and maybe even the building of new outbuilding type structures, right. Not necessarily little cottages, but maybe more outbuildings. Maybe there's historical evidence for some that existed that are now gone that could be rebuilt. And they could be units, they could be additional units, provided the density worked on the land.
Right, absolutely. And you would have that authority. I mean, if someone came in and, you know, they just wanted to build something plain and whatnot or incongruous with it, you can say, no, it's got to be consistent. It's got to be, you know, either ideally if there were some historical evidence, you know, or if not, you know, we don't want to have slavish devotion, so we have conjecturalism, right. But we do want the styles to reflect, you know, this is approximately where, and the massing and what, if there had been a carriage house there, what it would have looked like type thing. And that's certainly within your purview to determine. Mm. And, you know, that comes into play. You haven't had it yet, but, you know, one of the things is a comprehensive permit, which is under the state law for low and moderate income housing, which is where someone comes in. And if they're going to provide 25% of the units to be low and moderate income housing, they can apply under this comprehensive permit, which is one stop shopping before the planning board. Unfortunately, in that instance, you don't have a jurisdictional review. Your review is going to be advisory to the planning board as to the historic aspects of it.
Who grants the permit in that case? Is it granted by a state board?
No, it's granted by the planning board. It's subject to appeal to the state board, the State Housing Appeals Board, or SHAB, as we call it.
But the ultimate authority is the town's planning board in approving it?
The initial authority, yes, is the planning board, yep.
Is there any other state authority that approves it?
The regular state authorities, DEM, CRMC, DOT, et cetera, they still have their own regulatory authority.
So the Preservation Commission has a regulatory authority?
The State Historic Preservation and Heritage Commission?
Yeah.
Not by virtue of the comp permit. They wouldn't. That's what I'm saying. If someone needed a curb cut, then they would go to DOT. They need a physical alteration permit. If the property happened to be, let's say the property happened to be on the waterfront, because I did deal with this with a historic funeral home in Westerly, and the CRMC jurisdiction actually runs up all the river all the way up there in between. There between the Pawcatuck line in the middle of the river and the Westerly shore. Uh-huh. And so consequently there, the CRMC had jurisdiction. So the State Historic Preservation and Heritage Commission had jurisdiction pursuant to that. But they don't get any special jurisdiction because of the comprehensive permit. No.
Okay, good. Do we have any questions from board members, commission members for Andy?
I actually do have a question, and I should know this, but I don't, having been staff to the Newport Preservation Commission, Historic District Commission. So going back to the previous application, Andy, mm-hmm. I guess what concerns me is the interpretation of in-kind, because although I don't think the Secretary of the Interior's standards or the guidelines or the Park Service define in kind as identical, but I think in practice that's generally what we mean when we talk about in kind. And mm-hmm. so I think, and I understand the issue of color as well, except I guess the intersection of in-kind and color and those asphalt shingles. Can you explain to me? Because that, in fact, would be a dramatic aesthetic change. And in-kind talks about retaining the aesthetic.
Sure.
So how is it that the interpretation of in-kind can't include the color of the shingle?
Okay.
Roof shingle.
It can. So there's two separate things here. One, I just want to say, because I don't want to lose this thought, is with in-kind, I do think it's very important to make it clear to people that in-kind means exact. I've had trouble with that. People said, oh, I had a wood door. I said in-kind replacement. I replaced it with a wood door, even right. though it's nothing like the, you know, the 1850s three-panel right. door is now replaced by a Home Depot eight-panel door, but it's wood, so I thought it was okay. So that is important. Or, you know, I replaced the mahogany decking with pressure treated. It's both right. wood.
Right.
Why are you giving? So right. that's important up front. To right. answer well, your more subtle question on the color, my interpretation of this has been, and I don't know that it's actually anywhere in the state law or whatnot, but my interpretation is, if the color is integral to the material, then it comes under your jurisdiction.
Okay.
If it's simply a coating, then it's something that's reversible Perfect. And temporary, and it doesn't. So therefore, you know, for shingles, yeah, you do have authority over what color shingles they put up there.
Okay.
And that's why Thank I often like to see samples. Right. If it's just paint, then no, they want to paint right. it bright right. purple and pink, they right. can do that. Right. And then in the middle, we have things I'm trying to remember. There was a big push for a while for that coating. I can't think of the trade name of the coating, but it was like a paint, but it was actually like a heavy epoxy that yeah. they were oh. bonding to the wood.
Yeah.
yeah.
Something, I think zebra coating, something like that.
Maybe. I don't know. We rhino had come coating. Up
in, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Rhino. I know.
Rhino. An yep, that's it. And, you know, my distinction there was, no, that's not paint. That is bonding with the wood. That's becoming a permanent thing. And so, A, we've got jurisdiction over the coating itself, and we've got jurisdiction over the color.
Okay.
Or where we've had some new structures go in where they were using, you know, it was a new building, so they were using an artificial, like a manufactured wood product, or concrete type thing
yeah.
that the color was part of it, said, okay, if the color is part of it, then we have jurisdiction over the color. So that's right. the line that I draw on it.
Okay, that's really helpful, that's good. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy, that's really good.
Yeah.
All right, so are there any other questions from the commission members? Anybody? Karen, Andrew, Linda? Any further questions for Andy?
None for me.
You're all set. All right, Brian, then you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just had a question out of curiosity for Andy in talking about comprehensive permits and SHAB. Mm-hmm. Has SHAB generally been supportive of historic preservation?
No.
Okay. I mean, when it's put in a position where it's making a choice between creating affordable housing units or preserving a historic piece of architecture, are they opt against the architecture?
I have to say that they haven't had that. They haven't had that a lot. That dichotomy has not been presented to them that often. On a recent still pending case in East Greenwich, where that was an issue, they didn't rule on that issue so much because in the end, the Historic District Commission advisory opinion had sort of caved in to concede to the possibility of demolition. But I would just say from the tenor of the discussion and the decision, I don't think they gave it a lot of consideration. So now, as it turns out, we've reached, depending on what happens in court Monday, we've reached a settlement to go on to the next stage, where they've reduced the density and they are in fact going to, they're going to reconstruct this house. And I've got the Historic District Commission maintaining it's basically by agreement will continue to have some control over it. But to answer your overall question, I don't think if push came to shove, I don't think Shab would be sympathetic with the historic element as compared to the housing needs.
And one other comment that I would add with the earlier discussions about getting into the next phase of our housing changes when we start looking into larger multi-unit structures like manor houses and subdividing units. I think we will definitely be submitting material to the Historic District Commission for review and comment, because that is going to be a form factor for housing that we will be much more realistically expecting to possibly see in the historic district, possibly with some of its larger structures falling into the category of being subdivided. Certainly, a lot of them are already used for that purpose now. So yes, we would definitely be looking for your input on how something like that would be implemented in the historic district.
Well, that's a nice segue to my last question, and that had to do with any other board or commission developing architectural design standards for the historic district. So, Andy, what is your view on that? My view is, and you can take exception to this, of course, is that the Historic District Commission is really the only body that can do that for our historic district under the enabling law. We can't have the planning board doing that, for example.
Yeah, I guess I do take exception to it. I think, as I said, because, you know, if someone came in with a comp permit, you'd already be cut out of it by state law. You know, I think I seem to recall somewhere back in the distant past, I think I was with you on, because that was a question, someone was subdividing a lot and how they were going to subdivide the lot horizontal, you know, which way they were going to do it. And that was just the question, the intersection between the planning's role over the subdivision and the Historic District Commission. And I know I found that the Historic District Commission had it, even if planning approved it, if historic said no, they weren't able to do it, was my opinion on that. And I would still do it. So I don't think you're the exclusive one. Obviously, as a practical matter, it's not really good to have conflicting ones. I think, you know, as Brian was saying, the thing to do is, you know, to be involved in the drafting of them so that you agree mutually up front, these are the standards for the historic district that apply across the board. And I think that would be helpful too, as I think about the dangers of a comprehensive permit application. I think that would be, you know, would be better if it's only the historic district and then your historic district review is only advisory to them. It would actually be better if it were right up there in the land development and subdivision regulations and part of the planning development review of the comp permit to begin with.
Right.
That would strengthen them if you had one set of unified design review regulations.
So let me ask you this last question about the comprehensive permit. We're still going to be threatened by the comprehensive permit, aren't we, until the town reaches its mandated quota of affordable housing. There's no, if you have cottage zoning or if you have mansion zoning or if you have other affordable opportunities in our regs, we're still susceptible to comprehensive permit threats until we reach our threshold. Is that true?
I don't know. I think, you know, perhaps threats are too strong a word, but challenges certainly that you're subject to. But the more that you can do to have these things in place, because that allows you to show that you treat affordable and market rate developments the same. If you have these regs in place and you apply it to a market rate unit in January, and then someone comes in with a low and moderate income housing comp permit in June, and you apply it and they scream and they, oh, it's not fair, you're applying it to me and you're being unreasonable, and they appeal it. It helps us a lot to be able to defend it and say, no, this is what applies to everybody. And we're not just trying to keep those people out. We are in fact applying this across the board. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can you be 100% protected? No, but you can't be, as we've learned in the last year, you can't be 100% protected against anything.
Sort of like a vaccine that works 50-50.
Exactly. Well, no, we're looking for the booster here to bring us up to 90%.
90%. Okay, good, good. Well, I think if, you know, I don't know if I want to speak on behalf of the other board members, but I think we're all really interested in improving the situation and working in the historic district to have affordable housing and to get our affordable housing that we do have working well. I mean, I think we're very concerned, sort of underlying. You can see our current properties, some of them are not in great condition. Some of them seem to be, you know, overly, maybe there are too many units in them. We don't really know what's going on with some of them. The Kingston Inn, for instance, I looked at the parking lot and realized that this parking lot has like 20, 25 cars. And I wondered in my head, because we don't have jurisdiction over that interior, but I wondered in my head what's going on inside there. How small are the units? What's that all about? I mean, I think it's wonderful to have student housing in Kingston. And I think it's wonderful to have, it will be wonderful to have housing for young professors and postgrads mm-hmm. and graduate students. That will work. And we don't want to discourage that. We want to make it work. We think that because there's design review of the architecture in Kingston, actually for many people, you know, I don't think the place is really, I don't think people realize how much housing exists there, how much opportunity exists there, because it all fits in so well on the exterior at the moment. I think design review actually helps that condition and can help it into the future. Anyway, that's a lot of grandstanding. Forgive me. Anybody else have any comments from the commission? Any comments, Brian? I know Jamie's hanging out there too. So
Jamie, I think it was just going to observe, but he may chime in on some of this. I think to the questions and concerns about the comprehensive permit, one of the things we can do to avoid that, which is partly what we're trying to do with some of these design exercises, is to create more attractive alternatives for developers where we can maintain a little bit more control over the design process than the comprehensive permit situation.
Right.
So if we can present them, for example, in the historic district with a scheme for creating mansion type zoning, that they can make work at a good profit margin for them without having to fight with the town over a comprehensive permit, you know, it helps them and it helps us get what we want.
Right. Jamie, did you have any comments?
Yep, Mr. Chuckin, if I can. Just a couple of things, observations in the discussion, which I think is great and wonderful. It gives insight to us as staff to the town. But to your discussion on mansion houses and, you know, is there an appropriate form that could work in the historic district? In my discussions with Horsley Witten and Union Studios, which we're going to continue tomorrow, I think some of the things we're going to produce in the next round of kind of regulatory review is we're going to look harder at the built form and less at the words. And if we can get commonality and agreement on the built form, we have smart people and very smart attorneys like Andy that we can write the words to help to steer the result. A lot of times you write words without really clearly understanding what the outcome is from those words that are written. I think that's probably one of the things I brought to the table on the cottage regulations, that you wrote this regulation and it's very dimensionally based. Do you have any idea what the unit's gonna look like when someone applies? And they're like, well, it's gonna, I'm like, yeah, it's gonna be 18 feet tall and 1200, no more than 1200 square feet, but you don't have a single architectural standard associated with your dimensional code. So we're trying to flip it on its head a little bit and say, let's work on the intended outcome as a somewhat known and predictable product and work backwards to the words that hopefully will create a product that the town can be proud of. And I think you mentioned a good point. You know, is there a possibility in the historic district where maybe you have, you know, main house, back house, barn? That could be a threeplex. But when you drove by it, you would have no idea that it's a threeplex, because it's going to look like a main house, back house, barn, which would be perfectly appropriate in South Kingston as it would be in Lexington or Concord, Massachusetts. Right. You know, because you drive down certain areas on Route 2 and there's just 60 of them in a row. And that's what was built when, you know, you had the main house and then the summer kitchen or connection from the barn to the house. And that became something else over time when you didn't need a summer kitchen or you didn't need a birthing room anymore. You know, and now that secondary back house becomes a kitchen or it becomes a study. And can you use that form, that architectural historic form, and make it appropriate for a threeplex? I think, you know, the look of an outbuilding. And you have a main house with a detached carriage barn that has two units with it. Only thing that's complicated between the historic nature of those buildings and those buildings in a modern time, and you touched upon it, Richard, is the car.
Right.
Because with a threeplex, potentially become, you know, six cars plus two to four guest parking, and now where do you put 10 parking spaces and the turnaround movements and everything associated with what used to be a single family home with a horse and a carriage, and now we're introducing 10 vehicles. That's probably the complicated aspect of it.
Well,
we're going to try and do.
Yeah, Jamie, I'd encourage the planning, both of you guys in planning departments, to actually do like a case study in Kingston and look at it really carefully, because I think the clues are there. We do have several big houses that are threeplexes, and then we have some what look like outbuildings in back, and they're parking in back. You wonder if you could put two more units in maybe an outbuilding and it would work. But you, as you said, Jamie, you have to actually get out there and almost draw it, do a site plan of it, think about it, do a model of it even, to try to think through how it could work, and then write the guidelines accordingly. I think that would be wonderful to have, to be able to think it through. We want to do that too with new infill construction. We've had several infill houses that we've approved. I'm not sure if the jury's back on success or not of those infill. We have a new one that is about to be built on South Road. Could those have been done better? Could those be done better with this kind of a scenario as well? I don't know. The big questions for us. We'd also, of course, like to be advisory for those buildings that are listed or eligible for listing outside of Kingston, or within the other National Register districts like Usquapaug, Peacedale, Wakefield. And, you know, if there are scenarios that work better for them in this same kind of design philosophy, where we're really working with what exists and putting in the further contextual kind of elements that work with those properties. So all is good. Sounds encouraging. Sounds like you're thinking this through, and maybe Kingston is, you know, kind of a nice setting to make those experiments, you know, kind of work on conjectural ideas and see how they work. I think Andy has Andy left already? No, he's still there.
No,
he's
just still here.
He's in the bushes.
Sorry. Just leaning back.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. And I think what I want to encourage the commission members to do is to attend the workshop that's going to be at the Historical Preservation Conference this spring on how we should operate our meetings and how we review projects and standards and guidelines. Andy, you probably know all about that coming up. Are you participating in that too?
I don't know. Well, I volunteered, but I haven't heard back yet. I
haven't heard from Sarah yet. So we'll get that out. Maybe we can get that out through Brian, the reminder. It's going to be online, and I think it's going to be easy to attend. And we'll have a great training. I think we all need that in the running of these meetings and in our motions and in how we proceed with our standards and guidelines. That's to look forward to.
And, you know, and I'm available as well as a resource. Just, you know, feed it through Brian. If you've got other questions or whatnot,
okay.
Send it through him and I'm available.
Shanti, I think, has a question. She.
Well, no, I just said it's April 21st.
April 21st is that meeting. That's the Preservation Commission conference where we'll have.
The conference is 21 to 23, but the first day is the commission training, I believe. Commission.
Okay, good. So, guys, put that on your calendars if you've got the time. It'd be great to attend. All right, any more questions for Andy? I think we covered the bases. Thank you so much.
Okay, my pleasure. Keep doing your good job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, I think we can move on. I'm going to make sure I got the right agenda here. I'm not a great chairman because I shuffle papers too much, move things around.
So do you want to go back and breeze through the correspondence?
Yeah, I think that's important that we do that, get that done, because it has to be recorded in our minutes.
Okay.
So then we'll move on to the election after that.
So as staff, I'll report in. We issued the certificate of appropriateness that you approved at the last meeting in December. For 2590 Kingstown Road. We also had received a letter asking us whether we wanted to comment under Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act regarding some telecom antennas on top of the Morrisfield Road water tower. The water tower itself is outside of the historic district. It is an existing structure. The antennas are on an existing structure. Our zoning ordinances strongly encourage the placement of antennas on existing structures. In fact, you are allowed to do it by right, because we would much prefer that than to see towers going up. The work that was being proposed was really just adding antennas, the bar antennas, the vertical bar antennas, to the existing structure. They're not going to be going up, going out, expanding the dimensions of it at all. So they're going to be moving some of the existing antennas around to make some room and then putting some new antennas up there as well. So I issued a letter after determining that it really wasn't a matter for the historic district to consider, because the only thing you're given the authority to review is new structures going up within a fall radius of the historic district. I told them that we had no comment, provided that they were not increasing the dimensional mass of the existing structure up there. I will note, in addition, I've received a similar letter from T-Mobile proposing to add a couple of more antennas up there. It appears to be the exact same kind of proposal. They're just hanging more antennas on the existing structure. It won't be taller, it won't be wider. And certainly we encourage co-location of antennas over the creation of new towers. So that's those two issues.
Are there any comments or questions from the board members about this? Everybody's
no.
Okay. The, you know, as you know, the water tower is a bulbous kind of water tower, massive. It is screened by a great number of trees from Old North Road, and then from the heart of the district. The part of the district that sees the tower is really the eastern edge of the district on Kingstown Road, or Morrisfield Road, I think it is. It's sort of beyond east of the intersection of 108 and 138. And I looked at it as well, and I thought that it's just adding on to an existing antenna array. And I guess now we're going to see more additions to that array, but it's right in the middle of the top of the bulb. So if you get underneath the water tower, you can't see it at all. You have to stand away from it a distance to see it even. So I think it is what it is. Thank you, Brian, for taking care of that.
Yep.
So I think the next item, we're going to shift back to number five, new business, and the election of officers. I think this is overdue. There are only five of us now on the commission. We're hoping that there'll be at least two more members soon. I think we have had some applications. We're not quite sure about that, but we've heard about some applications. So with that, I'm not really comfortable continuing as the chairman. I don't mind being the vice chair, but I think that I talk too much and I'm not that effective. So anyway, I have a lot of personal things going on and I don't really have the time for it. So I hope that somebody else on the commission would like to do, to fit in for the commission chair. Don't know how Andrew feels about continuing as a secretary. So you may want to say a few words about that, Andrew, if you're up for being a secretary again. You'll have to unmute yourself. There you go.
Yes, I am happy to continue on in the role of secretary.
Or if there's another role you'd like to have.
I get your nudge, but I would like to continue on as secretary.
All right. And I was the vice chair. I can do that again, or maybe Shanti or Karen or any of you would like to do that. So maybe what we should do now is have nominations for, should we start at the top for the chair?
I'm gonna say I don't have the bandwidth to do this. Work. My work day doesn't stop now until 7 at night. So there's no way I could take on additional. Sorry.
Okay. Right. Well, I'd like to make a nomination. I think I'd like to nominate Shanti for the vice chair's position. See if she'll take that.
I would do vice chair. I really would prefer not to start out at chair as chair. I feel I would feel too. I mean, I see we have a very small group and we have people who are overcommitted. I get it, but I don't feel ready to jump into chair, but I would happily do vice chair.
All right. So we have a partial slate now. How about Linda? Would you like to be the chair?
I physically cannot do that. Not at this time.
Do it.
I wish I could. I just have too many irons in the fire and I don't think I'd be very effective at it.
Could we, or maybe Brian, I don't know who can answer this. Could we elect officers for a shorter period of time? In other words, if we could convince Rich to serve as chair for 6 more months or 3 more months or, you know, a shorter period of time to bridge while we get a member or two more and get a little more comfortable with the new composition and then figure it out.
Well, we are required to have annual elections for the positions typically to serve the year. There would be two ways of dealing with that. We don't vote for a chair right now, and Rich or another volunteer would stand in as acting chair. The other way to handle it is to elect somebody as chair with the understanding that they might be looking to step down from that position mid-year. There's nothing preventing you from resigning your position as an officer and retaining your membership on the board.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Rich, I guess I'd ask you if you would be comfortable serving at least through the May meeting as chair, and maybe we could revisit it then.
I think elect you
as chair with the understanding that you may resign after May or after August.
I may step down. Yeah, that would be fine. That sort of fits into my plans. I think I can take a few more months. Yes. All right.
It would give us a little breathing room, get a couple of additional members and then all of us reconsider where we are in May or August or whenever.
Okay. So I guess there's our slate. If somebody would make that nomination, that would be great for the slate. And then we'll have a vote.
I would nominate the slate as it's been presented, as Richard as president, Shantia as vice president, Andrew as secretary.
All right. Do we have a second for that?
I'll second it. I've got a dog that's out of control right now. Sorry. She does not like Zoom calls that start at 7 in the morning and end at whenever at night. So. Yeah. Sorry. Second, right. I'll second that.
We have a second, and Karen De Silva seconds. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
I think we're all in favor.
Thank you, Rich.
All right. So we'll go with that for the moment. Moving on, I think what we've decided to do is we've got our old business, and we can maybe quickly go through that. The cottage zoning update, I think we've already given you, I don't know, Brian, have we covered that already? That was number 7.
Yeah, Andy sort of did that. The only thing I was going to say there was that the decision was made to exempt the historic district from the cottage zoning so that would no longer be an option within the historic district. I think both Jamie and I stand with our conclusions that it would not have impacted your jurisdiction and review authority, but we also didn't think it was extremely likely that anybody was going to pursue that in the historic district, and in the interest of getting the ordinance through and done and set, we decided that that was just the way to go. Okay. And that being said, I'd like to note it's 10 of 7. I do need some time between now and 7 o'clock to shut this meeting down, start the new meeting up, and take care of some things before that meeting.
Thank you, Brian. And I think that our old business, basically, we can defer to the next meeting. There's really very, very little to say about all of these things. Please, though, item D6D, the project awards, think about what would be great awards to give. We're not really providing much advisory opinions, but we may in the future for town projects and for other projects. And we're not doing much with the revolving fund research at the moment. So I think that can all be deferred. Thank you very much.
Quick comment about D, just because I'm so bad at this, but I want to say I did see that Stedman's Bicycle has taken over County Auto. And I think it's worth taking a look at that. It might be a worthy project. I didn't look carefully enough, and I will, but if you happen to be driving by, it looks like
a good project.
Yeah, might be something to consider.
There's a little blue cottage now on Columbia Street nearby that was a Gothic cottage that could have been totally ruined and wasn't. So
That's another good one.
Yeah.
So
just keep that in mind. I think we should adjourn. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I'll motion that.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Brian, so much. Thank you, Andrew. I know you're hanging in there. And Shanti and Linda and Karen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rich.
Trying.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Everybody.
Bye, Brian.
Yeah,
bye. Nice to see you guys.
Stay safe.
Yeah, stay safe. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.